We're talking about the occult with E.A. Coetting, and there's much more to talk with him about when we come back on Coast to Coast AM. And we're back with E.A. Coetting as we talk about the occult, the other side, the spirit world. You were telling us, E.A., that the spirits have kind of hinted about major changes, but they haven't been too specific. What's your gut tell you?
You know, what I'm getting is basically that that we're not necessarily looking at the destruction of the human race or anything like that. And I know there are a lot of dire predictions like that out there, but more that there's going to be a massive shift in politics and religion and in spirituality, shifts in the way that we all interact with ourselves and interact with the world around us. So my gut tells me that we're going to see it through to the other side. I'm not sure what kind of calamity is going to be between now and then, though. It's really hard to say. Now, I do use several different forms of divination, tarot, I Ching. Several different forms of divination, and none of them really will see very much farther into the future than the next few years.
There was a movie called Knowing with Nicolas Cage, which every time I talk on subjects like this, I think of that movie that had this incredible ending, which I'll not mention. Do they give us any hope, the other side?
I think that they give us a massive amount of hope. The fact that we are able to interact with these spirits and we're able to project ourselves into the spiritual dimension, that we're able to basically interact with beings that are nearly timeless and who seem omnipotent. Is a great indicator of our value as a species. So that alone is a great hope to me, and the fact that we are being told, and not just me through the spirits that I've contacted, but you'll see this with a lot of different channels and mediums and predictors that we're getting. We're getting clues from all over the place that we are coming up on a massive change. I don't think that we would be getting these clues at all if there was nothing we could do.
No, probably not. Not at all. In your book that's coming out in October, Ipsissimus, how'd I do on that, by the way? Got
Perfect.
It right on. You talk about out-of-body experiences. Have you experienced that, and what are they to you?
Yes, I've definitely experienced out-of-body experiences, and to me, they started out as really like most spiritual adventures that I go on, as a way to just kind of see if I could do it and see what it's all about. So my first experiments with out-of-body experience was go to another town and see friends, and then come back and call them and ask them what kind of clothes they're wearing and see if it would jive with what I had seen in my experience and whatnot, and that was all successful and it was all fun, but then I started discovering that there are many, many layers that you can go with this as far as that we're not confined to this body at all, nor are we confined to the identity that we consider ourselves to be, and so it's been a progressive journey to gradually uncovering what I would call my true identity.
Eric, will you tell us give us some examples on things that might have gone awry on the other side, because you do dabble in the dark a lot. Has anything ever happened that you can share with us?
Things that have gone awry. One thing is that as you get into actively pursuing spirituality of any sort is that you start attracting a lot of unwanted spiritual attention. So you almost act like a very bright light attracting a lot of moths. So, you know, when you start opening these gateways and opening up your senses, you know, I'll often have entities there that that are indeed quite demonic and that are uninvited. And that's that. I think that's one of the biggest things that I would say has gone awry is just the attention that you start to attract on the spiritual level.
Well, that could be too. Now, when you're dealing in this, do you do anything to protect yourself?
I do, and there are a lot of different methods psychic self-protection and spiritual self-protection. You know, in an evocation, you're using various implements, the magic circle, and different implements that you're using that are going to protect you from that which you're calling to some extent. But more than that, there's a knowledge that I think a person has to have, specifically when dealing with working with other entities. In specifically exorcism, in how to get rid of them if things do start going not as planned, and I think that's a big part of where a lot of the dabblers will go very, very wrong is they're perfectly able to call these things up, but not so much to dismiss them, and a lot of those exorcism techniques can also be applied if you're having an out of body experience and you find yourself assailed by these other entities that might be aware of your travels.
Now, these exorcisms, of course, as you know, the Catholic Church has a department totally dedicated to this, trying to train more priests to do this. Do you think exorcisms can't be performed by lay people?
Well, I think that a person who applies themselves in the occult can perform exorcisms with more efficacy and less personal danger than a lot of the Catholic priests can. If you look at the life of a Catholic exorcist, most don't live for very long after they join the Order of Exorcists, and most do suffer a lot of physical ailments. They're basically putting themselves at war with some very, very powerful enemies, and don't really have the full protection that I think might be afforded to an occultist who approaches it from a completely different angle.
Would you consider yourself a soul traveler?
I most definitely would. In fact, that's probably one of the greatest titles I would afford myself.
Exactly. What is a soul traveler?
A soul traveler would be somebody who first would actively pursue their spirituality to the degree of uncovering their true identity as an eternal being, but also somebody who consciously is aware of the fact that their identity did not originate with this physical form, and nor will it end with this physical form. And so it's more a matter of becoming completely conscious of who you really are and actively engaging in that.
Eric, let's get back to the dark side a little bit. And I am fascinated by your fascination with the dark side than what I would call the angelic or the good side. Is that accurate? When you talk about good and bad, dark and evil versus good and light, is that accurate?
To an extent, yeah, we are living in a dualistic world. I mean, we do have opposites, and that is a definite opposite that we have. We do have darkness and light, then you know, destruction and creation that exists here. So yeah, I think that is accurate.
And this dabbling with the dark side, you're not concerned at all about anything conjuring up any evil spirits?
I would be completely lying if I said that it didn't concern me, because there are definitely times when I'll call things up and feel like maybe I've gotten a little too deep. There have actually been several times when I've put phone calls into some of my associates and just said, "Wow, I've gone too far this time." And then I've always been able to pull myself in, back into some sort of standing where I feel like I can get control of the whole thing again. But one of the things that that you'll start to notice if you do pursue evocation and even soul travel would be that the poltergeist phenomenon around you increases exponentially. Where even though you've dismissed the spirits and even though they've returned, that that you start having things moving around in your house. You'll have drawers that come out and crash to the ground on their own, and footsteps in the hall while you're trying to sleep, knocks on the walls, and it kind of gets to be part of everyday life after a while.
How many people have you trained to do evocation?
At this point, probably specifically with evocation, I would say at least 100.
100 people. Have any of them ever reported a very bad experience?
A lot of them have, yeah. I do get a lot of phone calls from my students where they've called on something that they can't get rid of, or that they've summoned something into their life that is wreaking havoc, and then that's when I guide them through how to get rid of that and how to get that balance back in their lives.
Has anybody ever not been able to get rid of one of these spirits and send it back?
I've never come across a case when a spirit can't be gotten rid of or sent back and where things can't be brought back into balance. Now, there are definitely times when I have to go make a personal visit to a student or a client or somebody and personally make it happen. I have yet to basically just throw my hands up and say that it can't be done.
Do most of these 100 clients, students, also like to dabble with the dark side?
Most do. I do think that if you pursue the occult long enough and deep enough, you're going to really enter into that darker, more mysterious, more forbidden side of things. That does seem to be a stage of your progression is getting into that which is forbidden, because there is only a certain amount of knowledge, I guess, that we're supposed to have, and then you kind of have to trespass to get the rest.
Do these spirits ever try to help people? You know, whether it's in a new career or job, and they've got this ability to help and push. Do they do that?
Well, most definitely, and that's one of the driving forces for a lot of people to get into the occult is to be able to call these spirits to do things like that for you, and that's something that I personally have journals filled with experiments of calling this spirit for this goal and then seeing that it materializes very quickly. I think that's one of the initial driving forces with most people who dabble in this. They get into it because they want to have that added control over their circumstances. It does quickly evolve past that, where you're no longer really too worried about being able to call a spirit to make ends meet, and you get caught up in the more esoteric and knowledge gaining side of things.
Well, it's the power of it is absolutely miraculous in many cases. How many people are doing what you do, Eric, worldwide? What do you think?
Oh, wow. That's hundreds of thousands, I would probably guess. Quite a few. What's really interesting is as I and my associates will work towards specific goals, which we will use these arts to affect things on a scale far beyond our own lives and even on a global scale, that we'll find that our efforts are being pushed against by other people out there. So it seems like there are a lot of people and a lot of different powers that are vying for control at this point.
Is it difficult for people who dabble on the dark side to meet other people? Are they generally high energy people, or would they be what we would call psychic vampires?
No, you know, most of your psychic vampires are going to be lower energy people that out of necessity need to feed off of others in order to have any kind of stability in their spiritual energy. You do have those rare cases where people are consciously pursuing psychic vampirism and are indeed powerful high energy people, but most of the people that I've come across that are involved in what you call the dark arts are extremely high energy, high power people. Most of them are extremely successful in whatever career field they're in. And they're basically able to push their will into the world around them, and that comes across just from walking by one of these people, that you can feel the power just resonating off of them.
Would you give us your website, EA?
Yeah, it's www.lila.org, and that's LEILAH.
How did you get that?
That's actually my publisher's website. So
okay.
He set that up for me.
And what does your publisher think of you dabbling with the dark side?
Well, you know, it's a really interesting thing, because my publisher, Lila Publications, the owner is he studies the occult, but he doesn't practice it. He doesn't think people ought to practice it. That this is forbidden for a reason, And so he thinks that it ought to be studied and studied well, but not applied ever. So it's a really interesting working dynamic that we have, where he can look at it and go, okay, well, you know, you're putting out this information that's valuable information, but he definitely doesn't agree with the application of it by any means.
Okay, well, you stay with us. We're going to open up the phone lines to get specific stories of people who might have dabbled with the dark side or conjured up spirits as well, plus questions for you, EA, when we come back in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, we're going to start with some of your stories with EA Coetting, and also some of the events that have happened in your life as well, plus your questions. So we'll be back in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Eric, what do you enjoy the most of being able to conjure up these spirits?
You know, really, what I enjoy the most is the experience itself. I mean, like we touched on, there are a lot of residual effects as far as being able to control your circumstances in your life and whatnot. But just the experience itself of entering into these other states of being, where you can pierce the veil between the worlds, that's really exhilarating.
Okay, let's go to some of the calls. Let's go to Jim in Berkeley, California, west of the Rockies. Welcome to the program, Jim. Go ahead.
Hi, I'm glad to speak to you both.
Hi, thank you.
I have some questions that I would like to have you respond to. And one of them is, I can understand the thing about getting into altered states of consciousness and the soul travel and the astral travel and that. But the idea I have a problem with, it's not that I think anything is satanic or demonic or anything like that. It's just the idea of the modality of it, of summoning and dismissing. I'll give you an example. I read about Aleister Crowley trying to conjure up Pan. You know, me, big magician, you, Pan, you know, and he's conjuring him up, right? Well, he ended up in a mental hospital for 3 months, whereas some of the people in Findhorn, if you've heard of that, attuned themselves to Pan, became his friend, walked with him, talked with him. He gave up his secrets to them because they attuned themselves in love. I mean, if you wanted to hear from a friend, would you say, come over to my house and tell me this? Okay, you can go now. It's sort of that. Do you know what I'm getting at?
Yeah, definitely. And that's really, when you get into the medieval era evocation, that it really is a lot of threatening and where you call the spirit up and then, you know, you're going to obey me or I'm going to curse you with the, in the name of Jesus Christ. And to me, that's just silly. The method of evocation that I put out in Evoking Eternity is quite the opposite, where you're inviting the spirit to take a form in front of you. You know, it would basically be like calling your friend up and saying, hey, you know, you want to come over at 6 o'clock and we'll have some beers, and they can come over. So there really doesn't need to be that that dominating, threatening form to evocation. A lot of times it does take that form because that's how the old grimoires present it. But I do agree with you. That's not really the way to approach it. Now, simply attuning yourself to a specific spirit, though, is producing a different effect than evocation, where evocation, you're going to bring this thing in front of you for all of your senses to behold in a very short amount of time. We're talking about 15 to 30 minutes where you're materializing the actual body of the spirit in front of you. There's really not too many other forms of connecting with the spiritual that are as intense as that.
Let's talk a little bit more about this massive change that you see on the horizon. That horizon, how close is it, Eric?
That's really hard to pinpoint. I would say in the next few years, we're going to start seeing some massive things. I'm hesitant to jump on the 2012 boat, but I wouldn't be surprised. I had a client call me. I do consultations and readings for people, and I had a client call and specifically asked me to read about what's going to happen on 2012 and on December 21st. And I used my tarot, I used chicken bones, I used I Ching, I used runes, everything I could throw at the question, and all of it came up completely blank. I was not able to see what was going to happen on that date or beyond that date.
All right, well, that happens. Mike is in Hancock, Wisconsin. You're up with us, Mike. Go ahead.
George, man, I remember when we had Full Moon Friday, and you said, and I got cut off. And says, Mike, are you the devil? Remember that goofy guy that laughed and said, I'm the devil.
Yes.
Remember that? And then I lost, and you said, Mike, you're not the devil, are you? And some dude called, and he covered my butt. And he said, no, Mike's not the devil. But anyway, George, I was in the Marine Corps, Semper Fi, brother. I know you're in the Navy.
Yep.
I was in LST, amphibious vehicles. But I dabble with Anton LaVey in the Satanic Bible and the Satanic rituals a little bit when I lived in Chicago, and it's not cool, man. It is really not cool to dabble with the devil. And I live on Indian burial grounds here in Hancock, Whistler Mounds. You can get it on the computer, but it's really it's spooky here, and I'm telling you, do not dance with the devil. Do not.
EA, how do you feel about that? You have danced with the devil, haven't you?
I most definitely have, it does change things for you. You dance with, what's that saying, that you dance with the devil and the devil doesn't change, the devil changes you. And that's definitely true, that you start aligning yourself with these darker currents, then you're going to find some darker things entering your life. An interesting thing about Anton LaVey and the Satanic Bible and the Church of Satan is that to Anton LaVey, it was kind of a part of showmanship. I don't think he really believed it. He seemed to be doing it for other reasons than the spiritual quality of the thing. But I think that he and everybody else involved quickly found out that they were indeed tapping into something very real, and that kind of spawned a lot of different organizations and movements out there that have impacted the whole spiritual movement.
Is this a growing movement now, EA?
Most definitely. You look at around Anton LaVey's time, late 1960s, it really took off as far as the occult and paganism, and it's gotten to a frenzy at this point, from what I'm seeing, where it's being embraced in such large numbers and with such intensity that it's really interesting to kind of stand back and watch.
Let's go to Vancouver and Washington. Hey, Richard, go ahead. Welcome to the show.
Hi. First-time caller and everything. But I actually, I don't normally listen to this show, but you seem like you really know what you're talking about. And I could use some advice. So kind of two questions. One, without actually doing some sort of ritual evocation, how is it possible that something can come in contact with you? And two, like, I had an experience when I was younger, and it definitely changed me. And there really hasn't been anything in my life that scared me as much as that moment. It's kind of carried with me, throughout my entire life. And I kind of want to get things back to normal, find that balance you were talking about, because I don't know how to explain it, but I had a lot of bad luck, and that same event has kind of come back to haunt me, not as bad as like the initial thing that started, but it hasn't really gone away, and I can tell, and I just want to get your advice on that.
As far as how can things come in contact with you if you're not actively pursuing it, like I said, the spiritual world overlaps the physical world, and that overlap seems to drop the veil a lot in a lot of cases, and where you'll have hauntings and possessions and random materialization of spirits. It's a really interesting phenomenon. A lot of times people will simply, for whatever reason, resonate with a higher frequency or have a brighter astral light around them, and they'll kind of draw these things to them naturally. That happens a lot with children. Children are very bright light in a dark spiritual world, and that does draw a lot of those things to them. So that can and does happen quite a bit, where people will have very intense contact with entities without performing an evocation. As far as how to get things back in balance, I'm not sure how intensely you've pursued consciously understanding what's happened, what your experience was and why. But I think that would be the first step that I would take would be to actively look into what happened, what the experience was, and that would be involving yourself in some pretty deep occult research. And a lot of people are going to be put off by actively engaging themselves in connecting with anything occult, so that is kind of something that you need to decide if that's a path you want to go down, because research often does lead to practical application, and then before you know it, you're a full-fledged black magician or something. So you do kind of need to weigh that into the equation. But I do think that that the first step would to be getting a really conscious understanding of what's gone on with you and why.
Eric, there's got to be some kind of backlash, don't you think? Some kind of backlash from dabbling with the dark side?
You know, the backlash would be that that you're if you're specifically focusing towards the dark side, towards the left-hand path, is that you're putting yourself into contact with dark things, and that can definitely lead into putting yourself into contact with malevolent things, with entities and powers that wish you harm, and you know, even entities and energies that would will for all of creation to go up in smoke. So as you connect with those things, you're going to become more like that, and it's going to consume you. So there's a fine line to walk there in consciously choosing what types of entities and energies you want to call into your life.
When you first tell people what you do, how do they react to you?
Most are pretty spooked out by the whole thing. And then getting into conversation with them further, if they stick around for long enough to actually discuss it, it really makes sense to a lot of people. A lot of the things that I put out there are methods that just about anybody can employ, and they start saying, "Wow, you know, this is something that at the very very least is extremely interesting. At the best is something that people feel like they could actually benefit from."
All right, let's go to Kansas City, Missouri, and Vicky's with us. Hey, Vicky, welcome.
Hey, how you guys doing?
We're okay, thanks.
Okay, great. I'm so glad you took my call. I have a question. It's been with me and my husband both for almost 2 decades now. We rented a house in Napa, and our very first night there, it was a beautiful house with sunlights and all that. But we were too tired to unpack anything, so we put the kids to bed, and we made a pallet in front of the fireplace, and we started to go to sleep. And all of a sudden, I looked up right before I drifted off into that deep sleep. And I grabbed my husband's arm, and I was like, "Look, look, look." And there was this black, I mean, completely black form that was above our heads, but back towards more the front door. It was a form, but it wasn't any kind of form. It was almost like an ominous cloud inside the house. And we both watched it move over us, and it stopped. And neither one of us could get up, and we were talking, and we was like, "Get the lights on, get the lights on, get up." We were instantly filled with terror and fear, and this thing just held us down. It just stayed over us in this living room, and I didn't know what to do. I mean, we were like concreted to the ground. Eventually, it let loose its grip, and we jumped up. We got the lights on, checked on all the kids and everything, but we moved out of there 3 weeks later. I mean, because it didn't quit. Do you have any idea what that was in that house and why it would, you know, come on us that first night while we were trying to go to sleep? Any idea at all what that could be?
Yeah, you know, that seems like it's pretty obviously a demonic entity or I mean, it's from your description, it seems like it's something that's very conscious as well. Like, it's not just a drifting blob of energy. Like, it seems like it's pretty conscious, which would definitely make it seem demonic as well, because of its interaction with you. Why it connected with you, as you were drifting off into sleep, like I explained earlier, you hit the theta brainwave state, and most people will go straight through the theta state within a few minutes and go straight into sleep. If you hold that, you know, just for long enough to have any kind of conscious activity while you're in the theta state, you're going to be connecting with things spiritual around you. Now, if you enter the theta state and you look around you, there are spirits everywhere. What's really interesting is as soon as you notice them, they notice that you notice them, and then they kind of cling on to you, and you know, more or less try to engage you even further. So I think it's just the mere fact that you stumbled across this thing that made it react to you so aggressively. The fact that that you became aware of it, it recognized that you saw it and you probably shouldn't have seen it, and that made it extremely curious.
Is it possible for a spirit or a ghost to be conjured up by someone? They move, maybe in the case like our call here, Vicky, they move and the entity stays, so new people come in and there it is.
Yeah, that's definitely possible. I performed a group evocation where I had about 30 people involved in this ritual in a basement of a bookstore, we called up several different entities in that basement, and it never left. People they used to have concerts down there. They would have all kinds of events in this basement, and within a week after our ritual, they closed the basement down because nobody wanted to go down there anymore. Even though we had dismissed everything, we had banished everything and exorcised everything, there was still enough lingering darkness in there nobody wanted to go near it.
Okay, next up, let's go to Jeff in Anaheim, California. Hey, Jeff, go ahead.
Yeah, hi. I wanted to know if have you read the Necronomicon or the Book of the Dead, and what would you think of it if you did read it?
I have read the Egyptian and the Tibetan Book of the Dead, and I think they're phenomenal reading. Have you at all, Eric?
Well, yeah. What the caller is actually referring to is the Necronomicon, which is a grimoire. The book the Necronomicon would be mean the Book of the Dead names, which is a grimoire that details some rituals and spirits from ancient Sumeria, And yes, I have indeed worked with that quite a bit, and have had some really startling results with it. It seems to be a forgery, but as far as its backstory is concocted, but it works, and it works.
All right, really we're going to come back with the final phone calls with you in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM.